Are you welcome along to the RTE Rugby Podcast? And unfortunately, it's a rugby podcast coming off the back of Ireland's elimination from the Rugby World Cup. They've been beaten 18 points to 13 by France at Sandy Park in Exeter in their World Cup quarterfinal. 13-0 up at halftime after a dominant first half, albeit one playing with an incredibly strong wind and rain behind their backs. But France came back in the second half. Two tries, one for Charlotte Escudero and Joanna Gizé in the final 13 minutes, and they just about held on. Ireland had a line out in the 22 in the final play of the game, but France got a hand on it. It was a turnover, it was a knock on, it was game over. Hannah O'Connor and Alison Miller have come into the podcast studio to join me, and guys, it's hard to even know what to say. What a disappointment, what an incredible performance, an incredible fight for Ireland going right down to the end, but it just wasn't enough, Alison.
Yeah, I think internally they'll be disappointed. Obviously, they'll be proud of themselves. But I think, unfortunately, if you look back at the stats and the amount of penalties that France gave away and their three yellow cards, it's probably an opportunity lost for Ireland. But I thought we played smartly in that first half and played exactly the way we should have. Used our territory, used our kicking. We talked about the conditions, I think, which suited Ireland. And we just probably need a little bit more of a lead going into the second half. But yeah, unfortunate that didn't get over the line. Like, we saw the impact that Aoife Wafer had been back in the squad, and I think what the back row probably were lacking up until now was that real turnover threat. You saw her getting her hands on a few balls and her dominance and her physical carries, her meters, you know, post contact. And just the fact that she's in the squad gave France, you know, they're like, you know, Aoife Wafer's back in, and even if she's not on the ball, that's the fear factor to open up space for someone else. Yeah, just disappointing. We were so close and it came down to that last second, and it could have been so different and we could be happy now. But yeah, look, proud of the girls for, you know, getting to the quarterfinal and competing, especially since Cliona Maloney is the only person with World Cup experience. But I know the girls will be disappointed because it was there for the taking, unfortunately. It just didn't happen.
Yeah, and Hannah was like, pretty much the first thing you said to me when you came upstairs to the studio, it's just like, probably never going to get a better chance to go and do it.
Yeah, like, we knew France were not even undercooked, but from that pre-warm-up match they had against England, they were very much less than impressive against that, where they got absolutely bet out the gate in that match. And then even in their group stages, they probably had the easier of the groups. They got the job done against Italy, same for South Africa and same for Brazil, but they were underwhelming, to say the least. So Ireland knew that if, you know, they could put everything that they had learned from their group matches into practice, that it could have been their day. And they did everything right to allow for that. They did all the things that you'd want them to do that first half, to play the tactical masterclass of just getting it right, and the elements that Alison talked about there, they would have suited us. Dana played excellently in that first half of picking the right choices, when to kick, when not to kick, send France kind of scattering at times, but just gooding. It's going to be the one that got away, absolutely. But the girls can be, as Alison said, incredibly proud of what they've achieved and what they've done for the country.
Yeah, and you don't want to be patronising talking about this, but 18 months ago we were talking about the goal is for Ireland to qualify for a World Cup, and here we are now looking back going, oh God, if there was a breaking ball either way, you know, Ireland could be in a World Cup semi-final. They were, you know, one score away from potentially doing it. There's, I think, in a few days' time, when we probably have our next podcast, when there's time to digest all of this, there'll be so much positive to look back on and things to move forward with.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the game itself, though. And I think, unfortunately, it probably, if you were to squash it all down and condense it down into one moment, it's probably that moment before halftime. Ireland get a penalty. They're 13-0 up. They've had that big wind behind their back. They've played, as you said, brilliant rugby. Bernard Jackman called it a textbook first half.
Yeah.
Textbook wet weather rugby in that opening 40 minutes. If you make that a 20-point game or an 18-point game, even if a conversion goes over, there's an enormously different feeling going in at halftime. And I'd say the lift, Ali, that France probably would have had just off the back of that big defensive stand.
Yeah, they got off the hook and they go in at halftime with, you know, a little bit of defensive momentum. And I was kind of wondering, should they take the 3 points? And me and Hannah were kind of, you know,
we were screaming at the telly, Ali, we'll be honest. We were screaming at the telly, if we were being honest.
Yeah, we were, but
it wouldn't have been an easy three, though.
No, but for me, we were talking about that in the first kind of phase when they came back for that reset. It was like, take your three, left foot aside, come in with that kind of, what are you going to be, 16-0 ahead? But for me, it was just that kind of savviness. They were down, France were down a player. You've Gabby Vernier out in the wider channels trying to shut everything off and rush up. For me, if they had kept going the same way with their pods picking, we played into France's hands by doing that zigzag of pod, pod, mm-hmm. pod, and then going blindside. France were in their element. All they had to do was come up and defend what was in front of them. Hit, hit, hit. If we kept them moving, we could have exploited, dragged Vernier in for a tackle, and all of a sudden then the likes of Higgins and Dalton would have even had to shift it that far. I felt we would have been scoring under the post. But look, you live and learn from these things and swings and roundabouts, I guess, in a game, but just gutting.
And it is a real thing Ireland have to work on now going forward out of this World Cup. It's finding that plan B. And Lindsay Pete was hammering at home really after the game as well. Like, plan A, when it was working in this game, plan A was to pin France back as much as you can, get on top of them physically, use the set piece well. All of that stuff worked really well. But, and it's something you, I know you weren't on the podcast this week, but you sent a message in to us talking about, you know, Ireland struggles to get their phase play going and relying solely on set piece. And that was probably a perfect example of it, where if they didn't get them all going initially, and once they got out of those first four or five phases, they were probably heading backwards a lot of the time and maybe players taking the ball in static positions. It is something now to really work on. It's just, you know, the foundation is there. It's expanding as an attack.
It is, but like the average age of this team, when you take the likes of kind of Cleaning Maloney McDonald and Edel McMahon even, and even Sam Monaghan, there's only three or four players who are tipping on towards 30. The rest of them are talking low 20s. That's going to be huge for us when, Ali, you know as well, we talked about all the other contenders in this World Cup. Their average ages are way higher than us. So that's going to be massive for us going through. Yes, it'll take a little while for the dust to settle on this one and for the pain to ease from this one. But going forward, I think the girls will have gotten so much out of this from an experience point of view. They didn't get overawed by the big occasion. Not once did we see them. Even last week, yes, the performance wasn't there, but it wasn't out of overawing. It was just that being able to adapt to what's in front of you. But they learned so much from it.
They probably had, I know against New Zealand, they had no go forward ball, and that was a problem. They were trying to go backdoor all the time, go wide, because they have, we have this brilliant back three. So I suppose, for me, being a winger, I would love to see now the evolution of the wingers to get off their wing, especially in a day like today, maybe where they're not getting that service because the conditions are quite a leveler.
Like the way we'd see Mac Hansen or James Lowe kind of drifting in field, popping up in the middle of the...
Exactly, and I can just, you know, imagine Emily Koskin and Bavin Parsons running that front five player and just, you know, being smart and, you know, run those ghost lines or just popping up inside ball, just simple stuff, tracking the play and seeing where you can be involved, either being a distributor, but specifically with those two girls, maybe being a strike line runner because they are so elusive. And that's what I'd like to see in the future. We obviously need more gain line or carries, but I think we did that better today. I think we Wafer brought that, and
Linda Dugang.
I think we fronted up to like a physical French pack that probably didn't look as physical as French packs in the past, but we had opportunities. But I, like, it was, when you look back at the game, it wasn't a vintage game in terms of a spectator. It was very scrappy. There was a lot of errors, a lot of mistakes. But I don't think anyone really cared if we'd got the result. But yeah, I suppose, as Hannah says, they're a young team, but they will get better. And I think hopefully we'll see their attack evolve and maybe a little bit more variety in the kicking. And we just kind of have to find a way to find that punch against teams. As you said, you know, being static, and we need to, you know, get those big carriers maybe on that second wave coming in. And because we are quite static at times. But at times then, you know, we use them all really effectively. And I think that was a real weapon in the Six Nations against France in this game, and they struggled against that. And I think they struggled against us today, but I think that the Griese try was probably the turning point. And I mean, Ireland forced France into a lot of errors, and they tried to offload a lot, and they coughed up a lot of possession. But I think she's a really good winger. I think she's probably one of the best in the game, and she showed her pace is not, I know Amy Lee has the 2v1, but she really finished well in the corner, and I think that was the big momentum shift. But I still Ireland had opportunities, so yeah, disappointing. I think the fact that France gave those three yellows was an opportunity for us to exploit.
Yeah,
we didn't, unfortunately.
You mentioned France having three yellows. I don't like to be talking about referees after a game, but this was like a major incident. It was flagged on TV as well.
Someone
potentially got a bit hungry. It was early stages of the second half. The TV cameras pretty clearly show one of the French players having a nibble on Aoife Wafer's arm as she was over in a jackal position trying to secure a turnover. Scott Beaman's been asked about it after the game. He declined to comment on it. Sam Monaghan said she highlighted it to the referee, who said it had been, you know, it had been checked. There was nothing there. I know we can't go back and turn back the clock and do anything about it. And it may not have had an effect on the game as well. As we said, France spent 30 minutes of the game playing with 14 players. But yeah, it's hard to see France. I believe I'm actually not going to mention the player because I'm not 100% certain who it was.
We'll all go allegedly.
I'm not even going to mention the player because I can't be certain what the name on the back of the shirt was, because it was inside a load of bodies. But it's highly unlikely that that player is going to be available for a World Cup semi-final.
It's not a good look. It's very stupid. If it is the case, I said, allegedly to have been what it looks like, it doesn't look great for that player. But yeah, it's those swings and roundabouts. And I suppose as you're looking at it, that's the sickener. If you were to delete the score off a kind of a stats sheet today, 17, 18 penalties against France, when your golden ticket from an international point of view, well, any game, but from an international game, is you got to keep it below double digits. Ireland only had 10, so that's kind of in and around where the capacity is for. But for three yellow cards and for Ireland still to end up on the wrong side of that scoreline is just a double sickener. But yeah, as you said, those big momentum shifts in a game, you know, referee sees that, TMO sees that. They were seeing other things that were probably less of a thing to be spotting at times. Like, we've come back all the way for the disallowed moment for Sam Monaghan's try early doors. Now Ireland went down and scored after with Linda. But yeah, just those things you're kind of relying. They are swingers in a game. They go your way. Sometimes they don't go your way. We'll see what becomes of it, I guess.
It probably sums up the impact Aoife Wafer had, Alison. Yeah. That's what they were resorting to try and remove her influence on the game.
For
a player who has probably been coming back fairly quickly off the back of a knee injury and hasn't played in several months. What a phenomenal performance. Even in the first couple of minutes, she probably had about 2-3 carries inside the first couple of minutes. She forced the turnover that almost led to Sam Monaghan's try, but obviously Aoife just knocked it on in the build-up as well. 26 carries, 9 tackles, 2 turnovers, 1, and a bite mark on her arm to cap it all off. But just a complete force multiplier of a player. And you can see the lift everyone else around the team has just by her being on the pitch.
Yeah, she brings that fear factor for the team. You know, France are looking at her going, Aoife Wafer's in the squad, and it's eyes on her. And then, you know, oftentimes it opens up space for someone else, but her meters post-contact are huge. And it's very simple, but if she can put people on the ground, which she does, we can actually then get some go forward, some momentum on her next carries and suck people in. And just, I think, against the other teams, at times we look quite skinny in defence, but say in the Six Nations, someone like Aoife Wafer came up with those big turnovers and let us off the hook. So I think probably prior to this moment, we were probably lacking that ability in our back row to turn over ball. And she did that really well, considering
creates what big moments. And we saw that there was a scramble where Bourdon made the quick
tap. That one break.
Your two people that are your kind of go-tos. Aoife Dalton comes across out of nowhere, makes the scramble tackle, and who's the first red scrum cap over the ball, turnover. Mm-hmm. That's a huge momentum swing, because we were talking about it, watching it. That was the first entry the France had into beyond our 10 metre line, and she gets you out of trouble. So delighted for her on a personal level that she came back. Her numbers speak for herself. Like we said in the pods in recent weeks, she doesn't need a warm-up game to get into it.
No.
You know, and she wasn't even playing at full capacity then, because she picked up that knock on the same knee and that kind of contact. And I was surprised to see her come out after halftime, and then she lasts the whole game and has such a big influence. So delighted for her that she got her World Cup debut in the cards. But she's a huge player going forward and is a big career for Ireland. Hopefully she'll have a clean bill of health for years to come.
She's such a well-rounded player. Like, she's every facet to her. She's her passing ability, offloading ability. Great, you know, her evasion skills are very good. Meters post contact, defence. She has it all, and she's probably only going to get better. And what I'm impressed with Aoife Wafer is she's been targeted. You know, she obviously came under the radar at the start, and she had these big performances, and then she was made a name for herself, and the team still can't handle her. So that's always a really good sign of a player, that their second year or the third year, they're still dominating, which she does. So look, it's brilliant to see her playing this World Cup, as Hannah said, because it would be disappointing not to see it, to a player of that of that excellence not you know, play at all in a World Cup. And it was, you know, nearly there. She could have nearly had another game. But look, I'm impressed with this team and what they've done, because, you know, it's obviously this dark years there for Irish women's rugby. And I think Scott Beaman and his team have backed up everything that they said they were going to do. You know, they qualified in that 2024 World or Six Nations to qualify for the World Cup. And then they go out in WXV1 and put in the performances. They said they'll get to a quarterfinal and just nearly a semi-final. So I think they'll even go further. Hopefully we see the evolution in attack and even more so in defence. And as I said, we'll see new players coming in that we don't know about yet in the next World Cup and go one step further. And hopefully then we can be a force to be reckoned with. But I think they're an ambitious group and hopefully they'll just go even further than they're already at.
Yeah, Aoife Wafer, she'll be only 26 when the next World Cup comes around. You could arguably say the World Cup after that is when she'd nearly be at her peak at 30 years old. So we've a long time to look ahead to Aoife Wafer. Yeah. Someone else who deserves a mention today, and there were a handful of others who deserve mentions as well, but Linda Dugang, 80 minutes on the pitch at tight head. She's no stranger to playing 80 minutes anyway as it is, but 24 carries, 12 tackles. That's just 36 involvements in general, with either the ball in hand or stopping someone with the ball in hand. Yeah. That level of work rate is phenomenal. Comes up with a try as well to top it all off.
Yeah.
And like herself and Niamh O'Dowd and Niamh Jones for those, probably that opening hour or so, obliterated the French scrum.
Absolutely. I think we eked out about 4 scrum penalties within that time. And that was one thing as well in that first half in terms of momentum swinger. You'd have loved, and I'm sure Sam Monaghan was in Amy Barrett-Theron's ears, as saying how many more penalties ref. It doesn't really matter where you are in the pitch, but it was constant pressure on that. You know, obviously Bernardou goes off for a high tackle in the end for a yellow, but they could have been asking the question because of the power that the girls were dominating over them in that, which was fantastic. Gives you such a foothold and such an exit, such an entry ability into the opposition half. But yeah, for Linda's stats, ridiculous, like for a prop to be having those stats throughout the game. And she was a constant thorn in their side. And Linda, we spoke about her as well over the last few years. Her game has kind of gone from strength to strength. Probably scrum is an area that she was constantly working on. And over the last few years, she's really upped it. And just, she's become an absolute beast in terms of her athleticism. I think I remember watching her play in a match where she was absolutely burning. I think it was Enya Breen at the time, length of the pitch, breakaway try, like, and that's the athlete she is. She's a bit of an all-rounder and her game has gone from strength to strength. So for her to be racking up those numbers is a huge benefit to Ireland. And as you said, she's still of an age where her next World Cup is probably where she's going to be at her best as well.
It's a bit Monday morning quarterback to be saying it, but only 4 players of the replacements actually came on and played in this game. Would you like to have seen that bench used a little bit more? Like, we've Emily Lane didn't get a game. Emily Lane is always out there for the guts of 20 minutes week on week. And, you know, it's nothing on Avian Riley, but you might have liked to see a little bit more freshness there at scrum half in the final 20 minutes. Anna McGann didn't get on. Sive McGrath, look, in fairness, Linda Dugang was having one of the games of her life out there. Enya Breen didn't make it onto the pitch either.
I would say, yeah, I probably would have liked to have seen Anna McGann on today because she's a different winger. She's quite physical. She runs, you know, she's a physical player, a dominant attacker. And I think her physicality maybe today when the wingers weren't getting the service might have stood to us well. But look, that's a coaching decision and we don't know what's behind that. But maybe they just, you know, I don't know.
I think obviously us, the injury to Brittany Hogan and the yellow card subsequently after Grace Moore probably reshuffle things a little bit too much in terms of maybe their actual plan. I think we've often seen Emily,
by then you're coming up into the final 10 minutes.
That was a big swinger as well, and it's a big sucker punch because you're trying to recalibrate then what you need to do to try to get a foothold to play back in the right areas of the pitch with the right personnel. I was surprised that Sam Monaghan came off when she did, purely from a leadership point of view, that in those kind of moments, that when it goes to line out, when it goes to those crunch moments of carries, you know, where she mightn't have been as fit as she wanted to be coming into this tournament, I still would have had her on for a voice in the ref's ear to be like, you know, bringing that kind of, because it's a long way for Amy Lee Costigan to be coming in to try get messages in at that stage of the crunch part of the game. But look, shoulda, woulda, coulda, I suppose, is all those things.
I suppose they still had, we still looked like we could do it. And I think the players were on the pitch. We still looked like we could come back and score. Yeah. So there wasn't the same fatigue issue maybe because the game was a very scrappy game, a lot of kicking. So maybe they felt their GPS stats or whatever they measure these things on, that those players were in a good position to keep going. And, you know, we had that opportunity at the end, which we didn't take, but it could be something to do with that, an SSC point of view as well. Felt those players were in a position to finish the game. And I mean, if you look at Eve Higgins and Aoife Dalton, they are a really good centre combination. Mm-hmm. And Enya Breen is a brilliant player, but I always say that I'd love to see Aoife Dalton on the ball more. Like, she's like a wafer. She can beat people and she can get those metres post contact. So I think, and especially when we don't get that much goal forward, I think a player like her is important, and Eve is that kind of, you know, that playmaking ability that they complement each other very well. So look, there's, I suppose they maybe felt in the coaches they had the momentum still and they weren't fatigued, and that might be why they didn't make those changes.
Yeah, like these are pretty small things in the grand scheme of things. Before we finish up, let's just talk big picture, what happens next, because 2026 is shaping up to be a big year for Ireland. Six Nations game at the Aviva Stadium, a standalone Six Nations game at the Aviva against Scotland. But there are challenges ahead, because you've, Alex Codling is going to be leaving this group, who is an enormously popular player and has worked wonders with this Irish lineout. I know they lost a lineout to end the game.
Yeah, but
that was the first lineout they lost out of 18 over the course of the match. Like this, yeah. These are numbers that seemed foreign to an Irish team maybe 2 years ago, before he came in. There are plenty of challenges ahead. There's plenty of promise ahead, Hannah. How did, like, this has to be just the foundation. This has to be something that you build a legacy on, yep, and go to Australia in 4 years' time. Not hoping to get to a semi-final or hoping to get out of a pool, but potentially expecting to get, yep, to a semi-final.
And rightly so, and that's what you need to do. Like, I think we probably missed, and it's the much talked about, missed the boat on jumping on top of the success of a home World Cup could have possibly, mm-hmm, brought the last time around. I think we've a lot that we can learn from our neighbours across the way in terms of how the English run their setup and how they run their English Prem. I would love to see that being adapted a little bit more into our own women's AIL, much talked about. So from a grassroots stage, to keep developing our homegrown players and getting, as we mentioned, talking to Des and Marie earlier on in Sunday Sport, is to be able to get eyes on those players that are out there, because we certainly need depth in some positions. We need to start growing our props and having more depth in those positions. We need to start looking for, you know, our growth in our certain department of the tens as well, and players that can kick more and give us that option of the variety of kicking in the back. So all of those little bits. But as you said, it's kind of, I suppose, within the squad themselves is kicking them on, having the right personnel in place. We've seen what the girls can do when they get the right personnel in place. And you mentioned the likes of Alex Codling. We lost, obviously, Declan Danaher was in a couple of years ago, mm-hmm, from a defensive picture. Hugh Hogan came in briefly and was back out the door again. So I think it's getting those structures in place and building on them from a squad point of view, from a grassroots point of view, really, really honing in on the fact that we've done really well at this World Cup and the media publicity that it's garnered and the eyes that have seen it, and growing the game from the grassroots level up to really counter, be beneficial to everything that's gone on before it.
Alison?
Yeah, and I think Hannah makes a good point about identifying talent there. And look, we've got a massive advantage in this country that we have girls from GA backgrounds, that, and kicking has become such an integral part of the women's game, like the men's game has got. It's so important how you kick. And there is girls out there that 13, 14 that are playing multi-sports, they're playing GA, they're playing basketball, they're playing rugby. And we have to go and find those girls now and identify them and fast track them. And just keep an eye on them, and like as we are doing, but not just the, you know, the big clubs in Dublin or the big clubs in wherever, the small country clubs around the country, because the women's game is different. So you'll probably find gems in those traditional GA areas, mm-hmm, that have, you know, they play a little bit of rugby, but they essentially might not know that they're a good rugby player yet because they're so young. So it's
a lot of our squad has come from there. You look at Dana, Aoife, all of those.
That's been the case for women's rugby in this country for as long as they've been playing. You look at Niamh Briggs, you look at Nora Stapleton.
It's a much wider spread of player across the country.
Yep. Exactly. And maybe we need to get into schools a little bit more, like, because I'm a secondary teacher and PE teacher, and you often see the talent that's there. But, you know, they're not open, some of their minds aren't open to it, but I think that is the key. And Scott Beaman talks a lot about, having coached against Ireland, that our aerial ability, our kicking from multi-sports, and he's a big fan of that. So get on it early now. We're a small country. You can drive the length of the country in a few hours. So I don't know, someone needs to get in their car. I know that sounds really simplistic, but that's as simple as it needs to be. And you go around and you actually visit the clubs. And look, it's brilliant that we have Lynn Cantwell in there now, because she is such an intelligent girl. She will give everything such a considered view before she makes decisions. Mm-hmm. And she will go and get input from people about how to drive the women's game. And she's very dedicated to it. She's very obsessed in a really good way about trying to develop the women's game. So I'm looking forward to seeing who the next Aoife Wafer is, who's the next Dan O'Brien, to add on to that squad, so that it's... We're talking about more names in 4 years' time, and look, use the small player pool as an advantage. Mm-hmm. Don't, like, it is a disadvantage, but see it as an advantage that we can get to know nearly every player in the country, because we can.
And yeah, use the momentum, as you said, because the girls have talked about, you know, leaving a legacy and inspiring the nation. They've talked about that through all this competition, and that they have. You see it on the ground. I see it the same as Ali. I'm a teacher as well at primary school level, and you see the chatter and the things that they see on the likes of the social media and everything that they're seeing. And this is becoming a bigger thing now. So it has inspired. So it's to jump on that bandwagon and be able to push it on further to the next level in every capacity, in every which way. So it'll be great.
Yeah, like you kind of mentioned the social media, leveraging that.
Yeah, absolutely.
TikTok leverage reach it. That has just been out of control.
Yeah.
Not just from an Irish point of view, but for globally, for world rugby. Like, that is, I think, much, much more different to men's rugby. Women's rugby is... it's a social media sport in a really, really positive way. And yeah, that is an enormous way of it. Kind of tapping into
it. And you see that with the players as well, that they're so much more personality. No offense to the lads, but they give you much more of themselves on their social media accounts, that they balance the two and they make the use of kind of having those platforms to really showcase themselves and what the team's like and what kind of everything that goes kind of beyond the scenes about being part of that team. And I suppose it's the only time, Ali might be a little bit different, but in my primary school classroom, it's the only time I'll probably let them talk about TikTok if it's for, for those educational purposes, for the benefit. I will let them have a green card for that.
Yeah, and it is interesting. I remember a girl said to me in school, "Oh, Ireland, we're playing." And I was like, "How did you know that?" Like, and she's like, "Oh, TikTok." And I'm not on any of these platforms. So, but it just goes to show. And I think the women, they will have to work harder to get their sponsorship or get, mm-hmm, so they see this as, you know, like the Ilona Mars and that are obviously at another level. But to get that exposure or that sponsorship or whatever it is that they need to do. And, you know, maybe men's rugby can learn from that and to get to know the personality of players and reach a wider audience, because I think men's rugby needs that as well.
Yeah,
world rugby needs it.
It's all traction.
To grow the game.
Yeah,
you know?
It's all publicity. It all grows the game. It all goes towards the benefiting of the game and the women's game, especially. Like, so it's a win-win in terms of that.
A huge thing with this tournament has been the crowds. You know, there's, mm-hmm, been not 5,000 in a stadium. There has been huge numbers. So when young girls are looking at that, they go, "Oh, look, it's same as the men's. There's just actually people at the games and there's people talking about the games." When I played in the 2014 World Cup, before the World Cup, no one knew it was on. Everyone knew it was on afterwards. They all talked about it afterwards, but no one before. Where this World Cup, everyone will be stopping you in the street talking about, "How do you think the match will go?" Mm-hmm. And "How's this person back in?" or whatever. So that's just been huge. But we can't rest in our laurels, and we can't talk about legacies, because we talked about that in the 2017 World Cup and nothing was done. Mm-hmm. So I think the right people are in place now, and there is actually a real drive to drive the women's 15s game, mm-hmm, on. And why not be, like, I want to see I want to be really ambitious, like, not just be so ambitious that we're really going after it. And why not, like, really put ourselves out there? And I think Scott Beaman does it, and I've been impressed with everything that they've said and they've done, and it's about even putting the next layer onto that.
Final point before we go, and I want to finish on a positive note. So from this whole World Cup campaign, what's the moment that will sit with you over the coming months before we see Ireland back in action again?
Oh,
the moment, the try,
one.
The game, the...
Oh.
So
the moment in a game.
Moment in a game.
From the perspective of, you know, a supporter and ex-Irish internationals as well.
I think first game against Japan, no, it wasn't perfect, but it was like kind of... the women coming onto the stage, and like, we have arrived.
We're
back at the big time. That for me was so nice to be able to see the girls just kind of release the shackles and be, mm-hmm, literally like, we're back. Like, we're back at the top tier. We're back at the top table, and this is where we belong. And yes, it hasn't gone to plan, but for me to see an Irish team back at the top competition is just the start of it now. It's back on track, hopefully.
I think it was just that first try today to say this is the quarter final, and such a fast start. Was it Linda scored first?
Yeah.
Linda after this.
Linda's
load,
try. Here we are. And that start and that intent that we're in a quarterfinal and we're not holding back and we're going for it. And that was for me. Here we're in a quarterfinal. This is the first knockout game and we are on it and we're scoring a try. And that was just really exciting. Obviously, we're disappointed that they lost, but it was just so close. Like, you know, so close. We've only ever beaten France 3 times. So to get within that score range and to get that first try and get those 13 points in the first half was like, you know, it just shows that we're as good as anyone. Not maybe yet, but we're as good as anyone in that quarterfinal today, and it just went against us at the last minute.
Yeah, I saw a stat at halftime saying Ireland had beaten France three times before, and in all three of those games they'd held France scoreless in the first 40 minutes. And at that point I was like,
yes,
it's a good omen.
Yeah,
they're going to do it. They're going to do it. But look, it wasn't to be. Alison, Hannah, thanks a million for joining us on the podcast. We will be poring over this game. Plenty of reaction coming up across all the various RT channels, online TV and radio. And we will be back for another podcast in another few days' time. We'll speak to you again soon.